Hi, I'm Martha Beck.
And I'm Rowan Mangan, and this is another episode of Bewildered, the podcast for people trying to figure it out, where we talk all about finding your way through the shoulds of culture and into the essential truths of your own nature.
Mm-hmm.
Now, get excited, because today we are bringing you a very, very special episode of Bewildered. So, Marty, I think there's a pretty good chance that our listeners are out there going, oh, wow, I have a lot of cultural messages in my head and it's not that easy to access the voice of my true nature.
Yes.
And I don't know, they might be thinking, is there anything else that I could do other than listening to this podcast to help me learn to listen to my heart?
Well, I had this question even as a young child. I would say, I am not happy. And people would say, well, it's all in your head. And I'd be like, I know, get it out of my head. But nobody could really help me do that. And so in my 20s, I sort of made up a system to help me detach from cultural messages and connect with my true nature. And it ended up being my career as a life coach and then training people to do the same thing.
And I think that, you know, it's just like people who feel the urge to heal themselves, help others heal and heal the world, that this term life coach sort of slots into that in our culture. And people take the training to hang out a shingle and become life coaches. People take the training because it's like getting life coaching, you know, and people also take the training just to learn to access their own true nature.
Yeah. It was originally just an access your own true nature course. But when you've mastered that, you really want to share it with other people, and people want to be shared with, and they will pay you money. So if that's the way you want to go, that's why it ended up being life coach training. But it's actually Wayfinder, which is different. It's about finding your way by connecting with your true nature and steering your own course.
So if people are interested, you can Google Wayfinder Life Coach Training or go to marthabeck.com and you will find your way.
Yes, you will.
And I need to say, if I knew, or if I had an amount of money for every time we've been asked to bring this guest on the show, I'd have an island or something, especially if the amount of money each time was like a really significant amount of money that I was given. Not sure who would be doing the administrating of this system. It doesn't really make sense. Anyway, who is our exciting guest, Marty Moo?
It is none other than Karen, our partner. For those of you who haven't heard this before, we are a throuple. Yes. So people wonder, what's the third leg of the stool of our lives? That came out wrong, because you don't want your life to be a stool.
Oh, yeah. No, that you could take that in any number of ways.
Still, the metaphor applies. A two-legged stool cannot stand, but a three-legged stool, like our relationship, does just fine.
Very sturdy.
Yes. So before we get into it, I thought I'd give you a little of the rundown, because we didn't waste time getting like demographic data before we got into just talking to the Karen. She grew up such a very good girl, going to 12 years of Catholic school, being like best athlete in the school for 3 years running, not realizing that probably meant there was a little gay thing happening. No. So just wanted to serve the world, went off to serve in the Peace Corps in the Philippines. Then she went on a relief mission to Thailand. She speaks Chinese and Tagalog. That's all I know. And was helping refugees from the wars in Southeast Asia. Later came back, got a PhD in social work, and ended up with me publishing a paper. We did research and wrote this paper that got us in all kinds of trouble with the Mormon Church. Yes, we did. And we did not care. And then we got in more kinds of trouble. Okay, so the three greatest enemies of the Mormon Church in the latter days: intellectuals, feminists, and homosexuals. We both we met each other with two strikes each: intellectual, feminist, and then we got our third strike by having a fling.
Hooking up.
just a fling. Like, it was just a fling. That's why I didn't put any pressure on the relationship, because of course I wasn't gay. And after we'd been like in a relationship for a year, she told me, I think I may be bisexual, if not gay. I was like, lucky for me.
So how many years ago was that fling?
Oh my God. It was almost 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just a little thing. It'll probably be over before we know it.
I'm so curious. Like, I'm we've already recorded the interview with Karen, and so I'm really excited for everyone to hear it. And I wonder, like, if she'll be surprising to listeners who know us, or if she'll just be exactly what they imagined her to be when they all asked her, when are you getting Karen on the show? When are you getting Karen on the show? So I'm excited to hear if anyone has feedback on their impression of Karen. It's so funny that her name is Karen. I should say this as an aside, because she's kind of the anti-Karen in the way that the word Karen is used descriptively these days. She's like, Karen would be like, our Karen would be like, I want to speak to your manager because your service is just excellent and I think you deserve a raise.
She would not go home until that person had gotten a raise.
So a couple of spoilers for the interview you're about to hear. Mm-hmm. We're going to discuss spoilers.
Oh, now you've ruined it.
We're going to play a game where Karen has to explain herself.
Explain yourself. Every partner should get to do that.
Yes. And then we just try to get inside the undercover culture bandit that is Karen Gurdes, our most beloved.
Yes, and we hope you enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed having the conversation.
Have fun, y'all, and stay wild. Change, eh?
It sure does keep happening.
I feel like there's something that you, Martha Beck, have created that will help us understand how change affects us and how to manage it.
Oh, by coincidence, now that you mention it, I have. It's called the change cycle. Mm. It's about four aspects of the whole process of change. And we've put the information together in one handy place so that the people can refer to it when they're going through change.
And you know what else? We also made podcast episodes about each of the four squares in the cycle that are also on this new page that we've made for the peoples.
Well, how remarkable is that? All right, you can find out all about the change cycle at marthabeck.com/change.
Mwah! And here she is. It is the Karikoo, the cuckoo, the Karen. Welcome, cuckoo, to your own house.
Thank you.
Until this moment, you have not been welcome.
So nice to be with you.
Aww, thank you for coming on. She's so obliging. So many people, I mean, it's ridiculous how many people have been like, we need to meet Karen, because you're a woman of mystery.
Oh, yes.
So usually, Kooks, when we start the podcast, we talk a little bit about like what Marty and I are trying to figure out in our lives, like as individuals.
Yeah.
And so I would like to extend to you the question, what are you trying to figure out these days?
Mm-hmm. Well, as you both know, a few years ago, I started watching Scandi Noir. And I have extinguished all my possibilities. And I am desperately trying to figure out how to get more and better. Like, I don't want the cheapos. I want the best actors, you know, from Denmark, Finland, Norway, Sweden.
Mm.
Things, the classics, like The Bridge and The Killing.
So good.
And I've seen everything. And I cannot find something new that's really high quality. So I'm desperate. I'm trying to figure out how.
Do you know what I think the problem is, to be really frank with you, is that the population of Scandinavia is at this point not big enough to support the amount of Scandi Noir TV series that you yourself need.
You make a solid point, since in a lot of the series, it's the same actors playing different parts.
You know what you should do?
But they're brilliant. I love them.
It just occurred to me that all you have to do is watch the ultimate Scandi Noir over and over. The Tragedy of Hamlet, Prince of Denmark. Just over and over and over.
No, thank you.
Next time there's like a production, like a theatrical production of Hamlet, mm-hmm. I really want them to like blurb it with the ultimate Scandi noir, Martha Beck.
It is. But I just want you both to know this is a serious problem for me because it's ruined TV for me. Like I can't watch other things except for murder shows. And I'm running out of those too.
It's all right, Karen. I'm sure someone out there listening will start killing people so that they can make shows. Maybe even we have listeners in Scandinavia, like folks.
Oh, you know, awesome. You tell them to get on it and make some more.
Yeah, either commit real murders or act it out really, really well.
I know they're doing their best because I actually saw something from Iceland that said there's only one, like, what do you call it? Like the sort of coroner, that sort
yes.
of pathologist.
Medical examiner.
Yeah. Yeah, in all of Iceland.
Yeah.
But there's so many crime writers that this person has no time to do their job because they're constantly consulting. This is true. And so they keep doing these, like, okay, I'll come and do a Q&A and tell you how it works. And they're all the writers are like, but how do you do an autopsy or whatever? And they can't keep
it's
up
true.
With the demand. So it'll come down the pipeline. We've just got to allow for Scandinavian pipelines.
Okay, well, those Icelandic ones are really good too. The best one is Trapped, I think.
Recommend Scandi noir recommendations. We all watched The Bridge together and The Killing,
yes.
and they were both
yes.
good.
But I'd seen them before that, you know, I just have to tell you, I need some more.
I'm going to reveal something about Karen.
Oh?
I don't want to start because we're about to like sing your praises, but I've got to say something that is quite annoying about Carrie Coo is when you watch something with her that she's already seen.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
like, oh, no, I don't mind watching it again. And then when you do the inevitable talking to the TV, like, huh, I wonder if that's related to that other thing that happened earlier. Karen will go, I bet you'd like to know.
I love giving spoilers and you love getting spoilers. It's a real problem.
How do you
I
say?
I hate getting spoilers.
She hates spoilers. I love spoilers.
I know. Marty and I sometimes on the side without Ro there.
How do you say?
You guys have got a side thing happening. Yeah.
Yes, we do. Just Karen just spoiling and spoiling and spoiling the Scandi noir. You could start your own podcast just to spoil Scandi noir.
Oh, I could.
That would be huge.
That would be huge. In Iceland.
That's right.
No, it's got to be Denmark.
All right. Karen's Danish.
Yeah.
So listen, I thought we could start off, Marty, by just each of us talking a little bit about who Karen is to us as individuals, as a way of sort of showing our bewildered listeners just how wonderful she is in so many ways, apart from the spoiling of the smugness with the TV shows. So do you want to kick that off and talk about you and Karen?
Yeah. Little history. I was sitting in my therapy session in Provo, Utah, trying to deal with madness all around me. And my therapist got this weird look on her face. She was super, super professional. And she said, I'm about to do something incredibly unprofessional. And she wrote down a name and a phone number and gave it to me. And she said, I just think you guys would have a lot to talk about. This was a friend of mine. All right. So I called. It was Karen. And I was like, well, this is super weird. But we agreed to meet for lunch. And then I didn't call back. And she called back. And then we met for lunch. And I was like, wow, what a cool person.
Wait, can I just ask, do you remember getting that call, Karen?
I do, yeah. I was surprised to get the call. And I also thought Marty would probably be about 50 years old because her dad was like 90 or something at
the time. He was about 90 at the time and I was about 30.
Yeah, so I was surprised that, you know, it was a fun lunch.
I was not just the doddering maniac you expected. I was the young and nubile maniac.
Yes.
Yeah, younger than
so
you.
So we just kept going to lunch and going to lunch and going to lunch. And I was, my then husband and I had officially unmarried each other. And she just turned out to be a really great person. And then we got together. There's not a lot of details to say about that. But let me just skip forward a little bit. I was helping her move and we were going through, she didn't have a lot of possessions. We're going through her stuff and there were these photographs and there were all these pictures of Karen wearing like rubber waders, walking through the streets of some very remote place in the Philippines. And I was, and always covered with children, like 10 children. She'd be walking along and they'd be hanging on to her, or she'd be reading to like 25 children. And then there was a picture of her with Caroline Kennedy and getting an award. And I was like, what the hell is this? And she's like, oh yeah, I was in the Peace Corps. I don't know. They gave me this, they give awards sometimes, I guess, you know, presidential awards. It was no big deal. I was like, what? And what I learned is she had never mentioned this. She doesn't mention her magnificence. She keeps it under wraps like a Scandi Noir. It's like a curtain of Scandi Noirness over her brilliant illumination. And
she doesn't give away the spoilers in her own life.
That's right.
If they're backwards spoilers.
Skip forward another 10 years. She's helping me raise my children. She's allowing me to have a career. She's helping me deal with my health problems. And somebody says to me, boy, Karen is the earth, the moon, and the stars to you. And I said, no, Karen is gravity, because the moon, the earth, and the stars will disappear. But that she is this constant force that is like universal. She's so reliable and so stable. You can like base all your calculations on that force. It was, yeah, and that's just who she is. Yeah.
One of the things that we're going to try and like convey in this episode about Karen is that there's a lot of sort of paradox, and for sure like the steadiness and the that constancy that you're talking about with gravity is there, but she's also like, then she's weird in weird ways. And I was just thinking
weird.
when you said she helped you with your health problems, we hadn't thought about this, but Karen's a medical psychic. She's not like your generalist psychic. She's only psychic about medical things, but we take this very seriously.
Can I tell only for people that I love?
Yes, so watch out. Do not get on her bad side.
She's not taking calls.
Yeah, so I was having this thing. It's not a romantic disease. It's called interstitial cystitis. And long story short, it's extremely painful. It's incurable. And it usually leads to so much pain that people have to have organs removed. Mm. And I was diagnosed with this after an exploratory surgery. They had living proof I had this disease. So I went and told Karen, and she looked at me and she said, yeah, it's just going to go away. You don't even have to change your diet. And I'm not kidding. When I got, they gave me a pamphlet for coping with it. And I opened the pamphlet and it said at the top of one page, to keep yourself from committing suicide, remind yourself of your religious beliefs. That's the medicine they had going on. So Karen, like, I was like, I choose to believe you. And the symptoms disappeared. They've sort of surfaced once or twice in the last 30 years. Other than that, absolutely nothing. But she won't diagnose me clear of something that I actually need to go to the doctor for. Karen, if you were a real medical psychic, you would just zap me well. But no, she just diagnoses correctly in bizarre ways. Yeah.
Yeah. You're so weird, cuckoo.
I am weird.
Yeah. And there are three of us here. You might think that Ro or I, because we're on here doing the, you know, be wilder, get back to nature, that we are the jazzy folks who said, let's all get together because the three of us love each other so much. No. That would be Karen, because she does not give a flying fuck. Excuse me, but she doesn't.
Love wins.
Aww.
What can I say?
We did talk about, without Karen there, to give spoilers, we did in a previous episode talk about the getting together of us, and we also talked about it on the We Can Do Hard Things podcast with Glennon Doyle. So we won't belabor that story again. But I want to talk a little bit about Karen and me, because it's so weird. It's so weird how it was that we all came to be here. And there's
know.
So many, I feel like in the, we're like seven and a half years that we've been together now.
I literally just looked at the clock thinking that's how long we've been together. Yeah. It's like, it's got seven. Yeah.
Yeah.
Going on eight.
Yeah. And there's been so many different seasons of it, but I sort of, instead of talking historically, for me, what
the biggest thing to tell you about Karen for me at the moment is this sense of being in absolute lockstep as parents. Mm. And how amazing it is to co-parent with both of you. But right now, when we're recording this, Marty is on a very tight book deadline, mm-hmm. and is yeah. must spend almost every waking moment in her book. And yep. This is very important for our family that she can do this. So a lot of the child raising of the two offspring that we have in our house, Adam and Lila, sort of is shared between Karen and me. And it is such a thing in this culture where mothers, or, you know, that there seems to be a lot of discontented feelings about sharing parenting within couples. I mean, I think especially straight couples. And that thing about the mental load and all the domestic mm-hmm. stuff. To share parenting with Karen is just like, it's just amazing. Like last night I was like, oh, there was an accident at school that required the, you know, some clean clothes being needed and some washing at our end. And I was like, oh, I need to do that. So I text Karen, no, it's already done. I already thought through all of that. Mm-hmm. Oh, we need to wash. No, it's done. It's already done. I'm like, where's her school bag? Oh, I just put it in the car for you already. It's just amazing. And I love co-parenting with you. And the other thing that I will mention in passing that's just one of these quirks of the Kooks is that she is like the queen of working with bureaucracies. Mm-hmm. And it's a really interesting skill that doesn't kind of get called out as people's superpower that often.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like, I remember you telling me, Marty, early on, like, you were like, she's got this. She'll just keep at it and keep at it and keep at it. Do you want to talk about that with Karen a bit?
Oh, my gosh. Like, just taking care of these fish we inherited from our last homeowners. Like, it takes so much
admin. It's a lot of fish bureaucracy.
To take care of three damn fish. There were five blue herons, got to two of them. It was horrible. Ro and I fainted and were lying on the floor. Karen was running out and like casting a net across the fish to protect them. But like, you'll hear her on the phone to fish people, who I think are fish people in some literal sense, that they are partly fish. And I mean no insult to them. But and this is just one single function. I mean, there's something for the generator and the blinds, oh, yeah. like just always something breaking, right? And Karen's on the phone going, so when will you get out of rehab? Because we can work with that. it's all right. I'm sure you won't steal it again. Whatever. She's like pure compassion, trusts everyone, but just relentlessly works to take care of things until they get taken care of. And I have to say, I am spoiled rotten.
Mm. Me too. We'll be right back with more Bewildered. We don't say this enough. We are so glad you're a Bewildered listener, and we're hoping you might want to go to the next level with us, by which I mean if you rate and review the podcast, it helps new people find us so we can keep bewildering new souls, and you know how much we love that. Ratings are very much appreciated. Obviously, the more stars you give us, the more appreciation is forthcoming. Reviews are quite simply heaven, and we read everyone and exclaim over them, and we just love you all. Mwah!
Hello, the lovely peoples. This is Martha, inviting you to a free masterclass that I have made called 5 Paths to Your Purpose. Probably the most common question I get from people is, how do I find my purpose? Why don't I feel that I'm on purpose? Well, it turns out there are certain things you have to do to find your purpose, and I broke them down into 5, and I made a little masterclass about it. So if you'd like to see it, just go to marthabeck.com/purpose, and you will be able to watch it without any charge at all.
Do you want to play a game, Carrie Koo?
Yeah.
Do you want to play a game, Marty Moo?
I do.
Okay. So I have invented a game for today, and the game is called Explain the Karenism. Now.
Oh, God help you all.
Karen is the only contestant on this game, but frequent listeners to Bewildered will know that every now and again we do a little item called Karenism of the Week, where we enjoy you so much and we enjoy sharing you because we shouldn't keep you all to ourselves. But I thought it'd be fun because usually we just say the Karenism and I'm like, we should like make her answer.
Yes, for the Karenism.
For her ways.
Yes.
Oh, is that what? Well, I don't really have an answer except to say I had a wonderful father who I loved so much, and he was such a good man. And he was a goofy. And, I mean, he would make up little sing-songy phrases, and sometimes he'd use the wrong word for something. And I guess I just got that little part of him in me because every now and then something pops out and I don't even know where it comes from.
great segue into our first Karenism. Marty, could you talk about the puzzle echolalia?
Oh, yes. So Karen does puzzles, and I've mentioned in another episode that we have to keep her in puzzles or she starts to pull out her own feathers and hair.
Especially if there's no new Scandi noir.
Yeah. Right. I mean, what's one to do? So she'll be puzzling away and it's a happy space for her. And then you'll say something like, did anyone get any cheese? And she'll say, cheesy, wheezy, peasy, neesy. And we're like, okay.
That's it. My dad used to say, chippy, whippy, dippy. I'm going to get some chippy, whippy, dippy.
And so in our house when this happens, because it's very frequent, figure that when she is in the sort of relaxed state of mind that she's puzzling, Karen's dad is able to like access her and she sort of channels him. So whenever she comes out with the cheesy, wheezy, whippy, dippy, we'll just be like, hi, Charlie.
Hi.
Good to see you.
It's so amazing that like...
I do love that when you say that. It does make me feel good like he's there.
I think he really is communing with us about the nature of the universe. Like you go through life, you go through death, you get to the other side and everything is like chippy dippy whippy whippy. That's kind of the meaning of life. And now he's trying to like... Karen is a medium to convey that message.
Oh my God, that's so funny. All right, I've got the next one. We love Charlie. Cuckoo, explain to us why when we ask you something about politics, do you need to stand up in order to answer? And I need to give a case in point, which is recently, because we three snuggle up and watch a TV show every night. We try to after we put all the other people to bed. And we try to watch a TV show. No Scandi noir at the moment, to our great sadness. But I don't know why, but there was some sort of thing of like, you know, one of Karen's special subjects is Donald Trump and what's he up to lately. So that caused me to say, what are RICO laws again? Because I've read about them in some. And she, when I said that to Karen, like with the genuine want to know, I didn't expect that she would need to actually pick herself up. Standing position. I think in order to gesticulate as a, I mean, I don't know.
Pace.
It's how one releases passion. You have to stand up. I think in that particular case, when I read something really good, like I read, I think it was in the Atlantic or somewhere about this RICO case in Georgia on Trump, and the way they explained it was just so understandable. And I just had
don't
to share
up,
it.
Don't stand up, Karen. Don't.
I just had to share it.
Right now you need to stay next to your mic.
Yeah.
I still don't know what a RICO law is. I was just watching her pace and gesticulate. I just am there for the colors and the lights.
Just, I think you got to think of like Amway. There's somebody at the top. And then there's a few people under that person, and then they plot how to get more people doing something that serves them at the top.
Oh, you're explaining RICO law.
I thought we just zoomed on that, but I'm grateful to know.
Which is a great segue to our next Karenism, Marty, which is called colloquially the pivot.
This is sign language for pivot, and we all know to do it. Woo!
Well, we're in a mostly audio format. So
put your elbow, your right elbow, and your left arm, and then use your hand like the head of a great blue heron about to steal your fish, and then move it from side to side to show a pivot. So I've used this example before, but I'm going to say it again. There was a time when Karen was counseling a young man who was suffering from depression and anxiety, and he poured out his heart to her. One night, he finally just opened up, and it all came out. They were sitting together on a swing on a porch, and he finally finished bearing his soul. And Karen turned to him, and she said, "How do chickens sleep? I mean, do they lie down? I've never seen one lie down." And he started laughing and laughing and laughing. And then he said, but back to me and my problems. And he went on for another 5 or 10 minutes. And then he stopped again. And she said, "I mean, really, how do they stand? Like, what happens with their feet?" It was, and this is a very typical conversation with the cuckoo, right?
Yeah. We talked about the one that was more recent where I said, "I love you guys so much. And I realized that, you know, that you people right here in front of me, my family, are, you know, everything to me." And Karen looked up and nodded and smiled and said, "A Dane won the World Cup." No, a Dane won the Tour de France. A Dane won.
You were just getting over COVID for the second time, and you were like, "I have lived. I have come back to this table with you that I love." And Karen said, "A Dane won the Tour de France."
Karen's nickname is Hasty McEarly Pants. Marty, yes. Do you want to give us some background before we demand that Karen explain herself on the Hasty McEarly Pants?
We have got you now. We've got you under lights, and you have to explain it, because this is how it works. Let's say there's a party at 6 p.m. It starts at 6 p.m. A dirty party? A dinner party.
Hello.
Hello. Okay, well, first of all, Karen thinks you can't be rude by being late. You have to come at least a quarter of an hour early. So it's at 5:45, really. But 5:45 sounds very much in Karen's mind like 5:30. And she recalls that people get out of work at 5 o'clock. So she's pretty sure the party is at 5 o'clock, which means leaving by 4:30 to get there. So we used to drive around. We'd get to a party and I would say, there's no one here. When does it start? And she'd say, right now. And I'd say, "Give me the invitation." "It's not for an hour, Karen." She'd go, "Well, we have to get in there, you know, like make sure we're there." I was like, "Karen, that's not the way people do it. People are late."
They're in the shower right now. Yeah.
I am always late. It is my way. So yeah, sources of conflict. Ooh. And like it gets to the point with air travel where you're going days ahead of time just to wait at the airport.
It keeps getting revised back. But it's not just... Not just in the like, what time do we have to leave to get to the thing? It's more general than that. Like the need for immediately, and if not immediately, then sooner. We had a moment where when we first moved to the East Coast, and it was getting frosty, and Karen was getting herself, because she is the queen of taking care of everyone. She was getting herself ready for, "I'm going to be a like snow controller." Or whatever.
And, a candy controller.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's right. She was calling on her ancestry.
Exactly.
And so she got all this sort of stuff. She got herself a little snow plow. and she got herself a snow shovel. And turns out there are these things that you're meant to put on either side of your driveway so you don't go drifting off or whatever. Now, the first day it began to snow that we were here, it had probably been about 20 minutes, would you say, Marty?
Oh, no. Yeah, and you guys are so bad.
and I see Karen, like, busily getting her mittens on.
Frantically.
Yeah, and I'm like, what's going on? And I swear to God, people will think I'm exaggerating. I swear to God, word for word, she said, "The forecast says it's not going to keep snowing. I have to get out there and shovel this before it melts." Do I lie?
Not a word of a lie.
Now, explain yourself. Exaggerated a little bit, but that is actually very true. I did say that.
Why?
You know, I have no idea except that I was excited to try that plow. Yeah. I really wanted to. Now I'm kind of over it. So it's like I won't be rushing so fast anymore.
So it's just all about different forms of having new toys that you want to try out?
Yeah. In that instance, it was. I don't know where the hasty comes from. I really don't. I think that, again, I might have to blame on my dad. He hated to wait in lines. He hated to stay anywhere too long. And I just think that's where I got it from. So it's hard for me to hold back. It's really hard. It's just slow it
down. You don't have to hold back. Although I do have these fears that, you know, if anybody is on like life sustaining equipment, Karen may decide it has to be put away now. Get it over with.
Yeah. I know. It's really sad, but it's true because you both know that, you know, I lost my mom in April, which was really hard. And the whole time I was looking at my sisters going, should we start cleaning up the apartment?
You did.
And they just look at me like, what? She just died, Karen. And I'm like, yeah, but we got to do this. I think it was just a way not to have to deal with other things, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
The hasty is in me. It's in me.
It is. Whereas the lie flat on your face is in me. So we complement each other well that way.
Yeah, we all balance it out.
And it's funny, too, because it goes to gifts. She buys gifts very early. She starts Christmas shopping in, like, January.
That's gotten better, though. I haven't been doing that lately.
That's an illusion, sweetheart. You always say that. And then what happened? But she has this thing that never fails, and she's done it thousands of times.
So funny.
And it never fails. She'll get something, some three-handled brass-covered family gradanza she'll buy for someone, like some weird thing that's never been invented before. And she'll have it. She's like, this is going to be perfect. And I'll say, yes, what a great gift. And this is in like April for Christmas. And then she'll say, I'm pretty sure I gave them this last Christmas. And I'm like, you're doing it again. She said, no. I'm pretty sure.
This time it's the exception.
And I'm like, it was only invented like last week. No, I gave it. So then she gives it to them again in an apologetic way and gets to work shopping on the next real gift. And she's thrilled with the next real one until she remembers that she also gave them that one.
Wait.
So she's given them the Christmas thing in July because she's like, well, I gave it to you already anyway. Yeah. So I just want to confirm that I've already given this to you last year. And they're like, no, this is great. Why am I getting this wonderful gift? Thank you. I've never seen anything like it. It's perfect.
It really doesn't work like the medical psychic. It's more like I must remember having given it to them, but I haven't given it to them yet. So where does that come from?
It's like a deja vu.
But it's so strong. That's the thing about it.
It is. It's very powerful.
Over and over. And it's not just occasionally. Every gift.
Yeah. And I'm always shocked that I haven't given it to them before.
Genuinely shocked. Man, have we cashed in over the years.
Oh, my gosh. I've just got one because it was just so cute and it was last night. So I've just got one more in the game, if you don't mind.
This was
Carrie Coo. So we often send each other like on our little thread, which is our text thread is called Wives, because why not? So the Wives thread.
I used to be a Mormon.
Yeah, right. So our Wives thread is lately mostly populated by Instagram reels. And last night Karen had sent us one and I'm trying to remember exactly how it happened. We got together for our like lovely little snuggly TV time and she'd sent a reel and there was like a sort of Doberman or something in the reel. It's usually animal things. And he was in a funny pose and Karen said, I said, oh, that's cute. And Karen said, oh, the one where, yes, the dog is resting on its elbow, so to speak. And I'm like, so to speak.
She said, how does anybody rest on their elbow? I mean, it was ridiculous. It just
how does anyone
rest? It was more like the paw, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, his chin was on his paw.
He had elbows. He was resting on them. Everybody does. Dogs lie down with resting their elbows. So to speak.
What was the so to speak? What was that about, Coop?
Actually, it was because I was very confused. I really wasn't sure what the dog was resting on. So, what body part?
Do dogs have elbows is going to be haunting Karen, much like chickens sleep.
Yeah.
How do chickens sleep?
Exactly.
They lock in.
And
actually,
nobody knows how chickens sleep.
I do. No.
Are you kidding me?
My God, woman.
How do you know if you're not a chicken?
I've been a chicken in so many lives. No, I have found people who know chickens well. All perching birds, this is what they do. All roosting birds have this reflex where they perch on a limb, and when they go to sleep, their little claws lock on to the perch automatically while they're asleep. Isn't that cool?
That is cool.
Yeah. Now you know.
So, Karen, this is for Karen, not for Marty. Have you ever seen a seagull sitting in a tree?
I believe I have.
No, you haven't, and I'll tell you for why. Mm. Wrong feet.
Well, yeah.
You know, but I think, are there seagulls in Africa?
Yes, there are.
Because I think I did see one sitting in a tree there. Huh. At Kruger National Park, as a matter of fact.
Maybe there's one in the world who's learned to do it.
Maybe this it was a different kind of bird, a duck or something. I don't know.
Ducks also have the wrong feet.
They have the wrong feet. Karen has a way of being definitive about natural phenomena. One time in California, we came out of a movie theater back when there were movies. it wasn't a Scandi nor. And there was a fire because California is frequently on fire. Oh, yeah. And there was all this black smoke over by the ocean. And we looked over there and said, what is that? Is that smoke? Is that a fire?
And Karen looked over around.
Yes. She said, it's either smoke or dark fog.
Oh, it looks like dark fog to me.
There is no such thing as dark fog.
I know, but it just looked like that.
Smoke always. Oh my gosh, we just had a huge flock of starlings go by the window.
Oh wow.
I just had one just come in the window.
Yeah. I heard it. Mm. It's all because we're talking about roosting birds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They come this time of year every year. It's so fun.
Yeah, and they come once a day and it's amazing. Wow. Anyway, sorry. That is something y'all can't see, but I'm looking at it and it is fascinating.
Thank you for explaining yourself so nicely, Carrie Koo. The next thing I wanted to do with you on this very special episode is where we really dig into what Marty alluded to at the beginning of our conversation, which is that of the three of us, you seem like this lovely, sweet, like you can, make friends with the fishmen and the generator people and all of that, and you just seem like this lovely normal person, and you are totally radical.
Completely.
Underneath it all, you are the most countercultural out of all of us by such a long way.
Totally wild.
And I was talking to you yesterday or the day before. Mm-hmm. We were talking about over dinner, about you coming on and about what the podcast is about. And you just said very casually in the way that you do, you just said, yeah, I stopped listening to The Voice of the Culture a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, this is what we want to dig into. Mm. So I want you to sort of help us understand as a truly wild individual undercover. Mm-hmm. As someone completely, pretty conventional for a lesbian. Mm-hmm. Like what has changed in the course of your life that led you to being able to stop listening to The Voice of Culture?
Well, first I want to say, I was probably 36 when I started to let go of it. So I was in the culture for a long time and not out to myself even as a gay person. And I think what helped me to take a different path, literally, was falling in love with Marty. I mean, love is such a freeing experience. And I'm going to cry a little bit. I mean, I had so much love from my parents, and they both loved me unconditionally. All they ever wanted was my happiness. And so I recognized that. in Marty, and she does love unconditionally. And it seemed to me I was, you know, in the culture. I was teaching. I met Marty, and all of a sudden, everything fell away. It was like, oh. And it kind of helped me to start opening up my life more and more and more, and just trusting love more and more and more. And I think when I really started to totally let go of the culture was when I met you, Ro. Because meeting you was like getting, I don't know, I think I used to call it the, like a water cannon of love that I felt coming out of my heart and coming back to me. And when you feel that, nothing else matters. It's like, why should I not do this? Because somebody might think it's weird when love is telling me, do it, do it, do it. If, you know, and then, you know, your mind can let go of all the constructs, the games, the things that you're supposed to do. And I still am that normal person with, you know, a lot of people, but, I don't know. I think that the thing that makes me wild is love.
Can I ask you, like, that is so interesting, because I feel like love is actually an area where the culture gets really up in your business. And I wonder if you, like, if you speculated about what if Marty had been a man and your falling in love with her hadn't been in any way countercultural, if it had just been like, oh, cool. Do you think you would have stayed? I mean, because obviously when the three of us got together, it was like, forget about it. I mean, that's
normal's
too far
in
gone.
The rear view mirror.
That's actually a fascinating question. I don't know that I could have ever, because a part of me knew I was gay, I don't know that I ever could have really fallen in love with a man. Mm. I certainly never had that experience before or since.
Good to know.
Yeah. I mean, I love plenty of, you know, like I love my brothers. My dad is like the best man that, you know, ever lived. And I loved him so much. But I don't think I could ever fall in love with me. And I sort of tried a couple of times, but it never even came close to that.
If you have to try to fall in love, you're probably
not
doing
it
right.
It's too much work.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. But it's interesting because I think some people do work at it because
Well, I just want to reiterate that I think what you two have in common, because you two are very different in a lot of ways, and but what you have in common for me is that you both love unconditionally. You both want me to be happy. You both don't give a shit, excuse me, that I love to puzzle and watch Scandi Noir. You know, if it makes me happy, you're happy. And I hope I can be the same, you know, to both of you. It's that unconditional love that is everything. It's not just love. It's unconditional love.
Yeah. And I don't know whether I learned it from you or I do know. I do believe it's in all of us, but certain conditions bring it out.
Yeah.
But I've worked with so many clients where they have what I call spider love, where a spider will tell you it loves flies and it means it, but it likes to crunch and munch them and it will wrap them up alive and suck the life force out of them as an expression of its love. And a lot of people are like that. I've got you locked into this relationship. And if you leave, you know, all hell will break loose. And they call that love and it feels like love. And the culture says, yep, that's love. Othello's love, where he strangles his wife. That's love.
Spoiler alert,
right? At least it's not Danish. But it's a real measure. So I came to think when I was looking at clients, what does actual love do? Love actually is the feeling of wanting the other to be free.
Yeah, freedom.
It sets people free. So when Karen came to me and said, I've been talking a lot to Ro and she's really cool and I feel this water cannon of love. And I just looked at her and said, Yeah, you do. You're in love. And I looked inside myself. I've said this before, but it was so weird to me that I could clearly see that my significant other was in love with someone else. And I was overjoyed. There was nothing but joy there.
I do remember that.
Yeah, and amazing. I was like, this is amazing. I'll move into the guest room. You two will be a couple. It'll be amazing. I really, because you'd given me so much unconditional love and set me free so many times that it was effortless to give it back. Natural.
Yeah. But you didn't have to.
I know. That's the miracle of it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because what we haven't ever talked about is that we've talked about it, but we haven't shared, is that it did actually really start with Karen and me coming together, and, you know, when we went and sat on the swing together and stuff.
So cute.
We were very preoccupied.
We were so preoccupied. Cute. That's right. That's what we used to say, isn't it? The preoccupation. Yeah. And it's funny because, like, I came to know you both through Marty's work, but it was actually, and I remember saying to someone who was living there with us, I was like, sort of, and it was before anything, it was before the preoccupation began. I was like, kind of attracted to Karen? And he was like, I don't think that could be the case. Because I was a bit confused, you know, because whatever. And that's where it got started from. But Cougs, I would love to ask you, because I think this thing about unconditional love that's so interesting that you bring it up with us is that I actually think you do that better than either of us by far. And I'm genuinely curious to know, because Marty and I work together, like we do this podcast together, we do our day jobs together a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Even though the three of us are a unit, how do you not get jealous or possessive or whatever when Marty and I do so much that takes us away from you and to be just with each other?
Because you guys are doing your thing. I mean, you both love what you're doing. And I don't. I don't want to be a podcaster.
You're good at it, though.
I don't want to write books like you guys do. And I see you doing things that make you happy, and it makes me happy. And I don't. The other thing I would say is that you know, for a long time, I really felt bad that Marty was working so hard by herself. I mean, I had a job, but it wasn't – what Marty was doing was amazing. And I couldn't keep up with her mentally or even physically because she's such a hard worker. And then, Ro, when you came along – I mean, for me, that was like, wow, watch these two together. Watch how Ro supports Marty. Watch how Marty supports Ro. And you can keep up with her mentally. You can, and you're interested in the same kinds of things. You can have conversations that are, I love listening to. I'm fascinated.
Not about RICO laws.
No, I have the two best partners in the world. I'm endlessly fascinated with both of you. That's the other piece of it, I guess, besides the love, is just so fucking interesting. And and I don't want to do anything that you do. And it doesn't make me jealous at all. It makes me happy.
You're so cool. How are you so cool? Final question. How are you so cool?
I don't know. It's other than to say what I think all my siblings would say, that our parents loved us so hard and all they wanted was for us to be happy. And when you have that and it's so stable and consistent and always there, even when I went and did crazy things like fall in love with a woman and then fall in love with another woman. I'm sure it didn't make my mom happy, but you know, she hung in there with me.
She sure did.
Yeah, she loved me, even though. So I feel like I've been spoiled with love.
Oh, here's to you.
And I still have it, you know,
here's
from
to
you
Charlie
both.
And Lisa, your parents.
Yeah.
And just if anybody wonders, is trying hard to be a good parent makes a difference in the world? The love that has spread from those two people through their six children and out into the world is literally incalculable. I mean, you want to change the world, they've changed the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a joy to be able to give that to Lila now, you know, for us to give that to her. And it's fun.
Thank you so much, Carrie Koo.
Thank you both for letting me come on. And I love you both. And I'm so proud of both of you for this podcast. It's amazing.
Thanks. You're so sweet for helping us. Now we need to go find some Scandi Noir.
Yeah.
Scandi Noir. Scandi
Noir. Wait, how do chickens sleep?
All right. Thanks, Kooks.
Okay, love you both.
Hey, you guys.
Stay wild.
We hope you're enjoying Bewildered. If you're in the USA and want to be notified when a new episode comes out, text the word WILD to 570-873-0144. We're also on Instagram. Our handle is Bewildered Podcast. You can follow us to get updates, hear funny snippets and outtakes, and chat with other fans of the show. Bewildered is produced by Scott Forster with support from the brilliant team at MBI. And remember, if you're having fun, please rate and review. And stay wild.
You know, what I'm seeing out in the world is a lot of fear and a growing amount of despair. Maybe you're feeling that way too, because the ways our culture has taught us to navigate the world, to navigate our lives, they are failing us. We need a new language. We need a new set of tools to find our way individually and as a group. And I know we can still do this. I put everything I do know about it into Wayfinder Life Coach Training. And the tools that I teach there are to help people redefine how we relate to each other, how we make a living, how we do community. We can only change the world for the better if we redefine how we think. And the world needs Wayfinders now more than ever. So please go to marthabeck.com and you'll find your way.